Hey, welcome to Night School, and I'm excited to do this one because I'm going to be talking about the Tinkerbell effect. And I'm not making that phrase up. The Tinkerbell effect is, I believe, a sociological term, and it's obviously based on the story of Peter Pan. And Tinkerbell is a fairy, and at some point in the story, I don't remember really what's going on, but at some point, she asks everyone to believe in her, to believe in fairies, or else fairies will just disappear. Where if you don't believe in fairies, they'll just be gone. And so it's the idea of something that can only exist when everyone believes in it. And that obviously plays into things like faith, you know, on a larger level, things like faith, spirituality. But also you can think about it on a more practical level than that, where if you go to a party and nobody shows up, if the party's a dud, you know, something is lost. There's a magic that's lost. Even if there's five people, it's not a real party. Whereas if there's a lot of people at a party, there's a certain weird energy that's created. And it's not just, it's hard to define what that is because it's not necessarily based on a specific number of people, but it obviously requires a certain number of people to be a true party. And so in that way, a party is a fairy. Everything's a fairy. That's going to be the underlying theme in all this, is that everything's a fairy. You just got to believe. And, you know, even things like in Star Wars, the Force, it's, you know, obvious parallels to just basic faith. You have to believe in it for it to have an impact on you, for it to work its magic. And magic itself, whether you're talking about actual occult magic or just magic in a very general sense, like that was magical. The concert was magical. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. And concerts are another example where you know, the audience has to believe in what's going on in a performance. The audience has to kind of have some sort of investment. And that's kind of what it is, essentially. The Tinkerbell effect is when a certain number of people are invested in something. And whether it's a tangible thing or intangible, it doesn't really matter. And you can see where that kind of plays out in different ways. Where just certain people, I think, are more likely to enjoy that process, the process of the Tinkerbell effect. You know, some people are just more likely to enjoy the process of the Tinkerbell effect. That doesn't sound insane or anything, but it's true. You know, you think about some people will go to a bar, and if the bar is just filled with people and it's loud and there's a lot going on, they'll think, I'm in the right place. This is where I want to be. Oh, I clearly know I'm in the right place. And they experience some sort of effect, some sort of magic. The fairy is in that bar. The fairy's in the bar. I go to those fairy bars where all the fairies hang out and drink. But there is that sort of person who goes to that, and they feel like they are in the right place because they are in the crowded, loud bar. And there's another sort of person, and I definitely fall into this category, who goes to that bar, and if it's crowded and there's a lot going on, you know, my tendency is to think I'm in the wrong place. And it doesn't come from some, you know, obviously if it's a bar I like, I want them to be getting business. If it's a restaurant I like, I want people to be there ordering food, sustaining this restaurant, because, you know, you need patrons, you need people. In order to sustain a thing you like a restaurant, a business. But my tendency is still to be like, I'm in the wrong place. I got to get out of here. I don't want to be in that crowded place. For me, the magic is created in, you know, there's more magic for me when you go to a place and it's sort of a hole in the wall, not necessarily a hole in the wall, but it's a place you like and there's nothing going on and you sort of have it to yourself. That feeling of having it to yourself, whether it's a bar or a theme park, like you go to Disneyland and you have it to yourself, that's when it becomes the Magic Kingdom, in my opinion. Not even my opinion. This isn't even based on my opinion. This is just my feeling. This is something I can't even control. And that's why it's interesting to think about how these things affect different people differently. I think just based on how certain people are wired, how certain people are. And as I said, you know, you go to Disneyland and it's filled with people. And some people, that that creates the magic. All these people feeding off each other and going on rides and screaming and doing this, that creates the magic for them. Whereas for me, going and being like, oh, Disneyland feels almost abandoned. It's almost eerie. That's more magical for me. That gives me some sort of feeling that I'm in the right place. But you think about things like sports events, and I think sports events are a very good example of the Tinkerbell effect. And sports events are a good example, too, because I think they show both a tangible and intangible side of that idea, where it's sort of an intangible, where it's like wearing the team's colors and screaming and doing all that. There's this idea that, like, oh, that doesn't impact whether those players, those highly skilled athletes win the game or not. You know, it's not going to change the fact that so-and-so can throw the ball fucking 80 miles an hour and so-and-so can catch it and dodge guys, and they train all week. And it's basically a machine that they train with the best moving parts. You know, it's like the audience isn't going to have any impact on these athletes. But, you know, I think the athletes themselves will often tell you it does have an impact, where having everybody there, you know, home field advantage is a real thing. I mean, I think just statistically, home field advantage is just a simple fact. You know, it doesn't mean that the home team is going to win every time, but generally the home team has a distinct advantage. And the audience does have an impact. You think about football, where when, say, the visiting team is on offense, the crowd will just try to drown them out with noise because the quarterback has to make certain calls, audibles, things like that. He has to try to communicate to the other players in the huddle with the sidelines, and the crowd, the home field crowd, is just trying to drown that out. So that has a very real effect. But I also think just the energy, all of that, you know, I think that a team seeing a sea of their uniform colors out in the audience, people wearing jerseys, hats, everything. I think that feeds something inside of the players too. It's fanfare, and I think fanfare does something in the same way that when a band plays live, knowing that the audience is actually enjoying what they're seeing, what they're into, it all creates a fairy. There's a fairy dancing above every football game when the home field crowd is cheering on their team. There's a bunch of fairies dancing around. Yo, you see that fairy, man? The fairies are football fans. Have faith in fairies, for they are football fans. That's my quote of the day. But to go back to what I'm saying about myself, when it's something like that, I get it. You know, and I like to participate in that. I'm a football fan. So when I go to, like, when I went to the Seahawks game the year they won the Super Bowl, there was nothing like that. And I loved participating in that. I turned into a maniac. I went with a coworker of mine, and he was just shocked at the way I acted. It wasn't obnoxious, but I added to the din. You know, I lost my voice actually that day. I remember it. The year they won. But despite that, you know, what I'll say is I understand it when it's a very tangible thing that needs everybody's energy. I understand that. And same if you're working on a project with people, you have to kind of put positive energy forward, because a lot of this plays into positive thinking. The Tinkerbell effect is essentially that in the story of Peter Pan, where it's like you all have to envision that fairies exist for them to exist. And that's sort of the idea behind most positive thinking, positive ideation, even that fucking book, The Secret. It's all based on that idea. It's all based on fairies, fairy magic. Everything's based on fairy magic. I never think about fairies. That's the funny thing. I came across the phrase, the Tinkerbell effect. It's a phrase I've heard before several times, but I came across it in something I was reading recently, which is why it was on my brain. And I never think about fairies, despite all the supernatural crazy shit. I think about gnomes more than I think about fairies, and I don't think about gnomes very often either. So that should tell you something. But all of a sudden, I've got fairies on the brain. It's part of my own positive thinking, is having fairies on the brain. It's like having water on the brain. It's like some sort of illness. He's got fairies on the brain, some ancient thing, like a tribe diagnosed some, like, used to diagnose mentally ill people as simply having fairies on the brain. But it's a good thing. Having fairies on the brain is, it's like the opposite of mental illness. It means you're doing well if you got fairies on the brain. But for me, like, as I was saying, before I got fairies on the brain, is that, you know, I understand it when it's like at a sports event or if you're working on a project or if it's just something where, you know, you have to bring a positive mindset in order for something to work more efficiently or to sort of work a very obvious magic, like cheering a team, being a good audience member, you know, effectively building something. Like if everybody's, even just whether it's a construction project, a school project, it doesn't matter what it is, if everybody involved can visualize the end result and everything working together, it's going to work together better. A fairy is going to help you. But that said, my natural tendency is the opposite. And that's actually been a huge part of the changes in my life the last few years is embracing that sort of Tinkerbell effect when it's needed and not necessarily just because I naturally want to go to the darkest corner I can away from everybody in a way, no matter how good it is for me. It's because it's often to my own detriment. But my natural tendency is very much in the camp of the reverse Tinkerbell effect. And the reverse Tinkerbell effect is a real phrase too. You can actually look this up. I'm not making this up. And the reverse Tinkerbell effect is the idea that the more people that believe in something, the less likely it is to exist. And that fascinates me because so much of my wiring is that. And it kind of feeds into a lot of esoteric thinking. And you think about organized religion, and a lot of organized religion is based on the idea of recruiting people. You have as many children as you can, and you bring them up in the religion. You go out and you're a missionary. You recruit more people for that religion, and that in turn makes that religion greater. And I suppose it also, you know, makes the underlying spirituality of that religion somehow more profound. I don't really know how that part works, but but with a lot of esoteric beliefs, and you think about the occult, and a lot of that's kind of based on the opposite, where it's like, you know, you got to find it on your own, and you know, you got to find your own path, and you don't recruit people, you don't do anything like that. You just sort of, and some of that is ego. A lot of it is ego, and people want to make themselves feel powerful, and they do so by being part of something that very few people are a part of. It's an elitist mentality, and the reverse Tinkerbell effect definitely plays into that elitist mentality. And I've always kind of struggled with that. I've never considered myself an elitist because I don't know, because an elitist just sounds, it seems, and when I think of an elitist, I think of somebody who judges people based on a set of qualifications, and I don't do that. I definitely have spent my entire life judging people and kind of trying to climb my own little tower somewhere, but it's not really, I don't really reject people based on qualifications. It's just, it's much more of just a gut thing, a feeling. But a lot of things are based on, you know, rejecting things based on qualifications, but also just this sort of idea that, like, I want the things that I care about to be cared about by only me or a limited number of people. And you think about the reverse Tinkerbell effect, like you go to a park, let's say it's a trail to be more specific, because in the same way that you go to, like, if you go to like a sports game, you're not going to go and think like, gee, I sure wish all these people weren't cheering for the team. You know, even if you're a fan of the visiting team, you understand that you're in the home team stadium and people are going to cheer for that home team. And there's some fun interplay there where, like, you cheer for the visiting team and, like, everyone hates you and Rosie cries. I hope she doesn't puke. Sometimes she does that before she pukes. Just think about fairies, Rosie. Puke fairies. You know, so there's some places you go where you just, it's all based on essentially the Tinkerbell effect. But there are sometimes you go to places like, say, it's a park, a trail. Here in Washington State, we have wonderful trails with huge trees. And I'll go to a trail on, say, a nice day, and I see that the parking lot is filled with cars. There's tons of people on this trail. And I think, fuck, you know, a certain magic is going to be lost in this experience. And there's nothing I can do to change that. I can rationalize it, you know, because that's the thing. That's why so much of this to me is a feeling that and a wiring inside of me that I just can't change. Where if I go to a trail and I see a ton of cars, I can think, oh, well, it's really nice that all these people care about nature and they're bringing their kids. And this shows that people value nature. And that means we are more likely to preserve nature. And, you know, there might be, it shows that there's environmentalism's on the rise, you know? There's ways that I can rationalize it and think this is a good thing. I'm really glad that people are appreciating nature because it means nature is more likely to exist. Just one sec. Rosie might be doing something weird. One sec. I might have to edit this. No, she's not. Sometimes she has this issue, just to go on a complete tangent. As she's gotten older, she's had thyroid issues for years, and she'll occasionally, like, poop outside of her litter box, and it's this nasty, runny thing, so it's, like, clearly comes from some sort of health issue, but she'll do it in my bathroom, which is weird, and, like, right in front of my toilet, so it's strange that she, even though she's, for whatever reason, she doesn't do this weird form of shitting, in the litter box, but when she does do it outside the litter box, it's in these very specific locations, and one of them is right in front of my toilet. So it's like she doesn't do it in her bathroom, she does it in my bathroom, which is sort of interesting. Like, it's like she knows that that's a place of where you do that. But anyway, as I was saying, like on a trail, you know, I can rationalize it when I see a lot of cars in the parking lot and think, like, oh, it's great that these people are appreciating nature. That's, in the long run, that's better for everybody. It's better for people who appreciate nature. But that doesn't change the fact that it's going to make my experience worse. Because at the very least, it's like you're just running into a lot of people on the trail. And you have to decide whether or not you're going to say hi to them, whether you're going to nod, whether you're going to not acknowledge them. If you do acknowledge them, if you do say hi and they don't say hi back, and there's that weird trail tension that I've talked about since forever, that weird, I said hi to somebody on a trail and they didn't say anything back. Doesn't that make things more awkward than saying hi to them? I don't know. But it creates a dilemma when there's a lot of people on a trail, and it takes away the magic of being in a big, beautiful forest, a BBF, a big, beautiful forest. That's a category on porn sites now, BBF, like those big, beautiful forests, those Rubenesque forests. So there's a certain magic that just gets lost. And maybe there is a certain sort of person that goes to trails and sees a lot of cars and thinks, awesome. The same sort of person who goes to a bar and sees that a bar is crowded and thinks, awesome. Like, I can't wait to be a part of this din, to this just cloud of human consciousness. It's all in one place, because that's exactly what they think. This cloud of human consciousness. Maybe there's a certain sort of person, though, who goes to a trail and feels that way. Although I doubt it. I think that the sort of person who goes to a trail, especially a wooded trail in the Pacific Northwest, I think they generally want that experience to be not as exclusive as possible, but let's say as personal as possible. Because this kind of plays into the elitism thing, because there's a certain form of person who wants things to be exclusive. They want things to feel like other people aren't a part of it and that they're special, and that's not where I'm coming from. I'm coming from a place where it's more, I want things to feel personal. And the more people that are involved in something, the less personal it feels. And you think about the reverse Tinkerbell effect really plays into collecting. And the idea, it doesn't matter what it is, I guess the entire idea of collectorship, I don't know if that's a word, but the entire idea of being a collector is basically based. Yo, it was basically based on the reverse Tinkerbell effect. Collecting is based on that. It's the idea that I have something, and the less the fewer people that have touched this thing, the fewer people that have this thing, the fewer of this thing that exist make it more special. And that gives it a certain magic. Whether it's an antique, like only 30 of these were made, and, you know, the other 29 were broken. And so I'm fucking special, you know, if I have that, the only one. This is the only one that exists. You know, there's a certain magic to that, and I acknowledge that magic. Even though it's sort of based on exclusivity, I think there is something becomes magical when it's unique. Uniqueness is entirely magical, and our society as a whole values uniqueness for obvious reasons. And it also rejects it and tries to kill the unique elements. So it's this weird double bind of existence that I could go on about forever, where we both seek out as a group, as a society, we seek out uniqueness and we place it on a pedestal, and then we also try to destroy it. But yeah, with collecting, you see it, and you see it with record collecting too. The idea of a record being limited, or a certain variation of a record, you know, and it has nothing to do with the tangible object. Yeah, a lot of record collectors are huge music fans, but the ones who get off into these little minute details and collect every variation of a certain record and the misprint and this, there's something cool about that. It's a game. It's a fun game, because a lot of this stuff is just based on playing a game, because life is weird and you don't know what to do with your time, so you play weird little games. A lot of collecting is that. But the entire idea behind it is that the more people that basically have access to this, that the less magic it has, and that's why things that are rare are more valuable. And even if you're not the one doing the collecting, you still recognize the value. There's a reason why people watch Antique Roadshow. Is it Antiques Roadshow or Antique Roadshow? I don't know. I don't know if it's plural or not. I know it has those weird fucking twins, those two guys, those blonde twins, who aren't rare. Those guys aren't rare enough for me. Those two twins who are antique experts who are on Antique Roadshow, they're not rare enough because there's two of them. Someone's got to kill one of them. Who knew? Who knew that this show would turn into me issuing a death threat for one of the antique expert, one of the twin antique experts from Antiques Roadshow? The entire like audience for that show is based on like, I'm gonna see something rare. Wait till you see what this thing's worth. Oh my God, $500K. That's worth $500K. Together, the twins are worth 500,000, but if you kill one of them, the remaining one is worth $1,000,000 because he became more rare. Don't do the math behind that. The math is based on the reverse Tinkerbell effect. But no, but antiquing is based on that. It's, you know, based on rarity. It's based on even just access to something. It's like there's that idea of keeping something hidden too. It's like you see rare things in museums, and that's an entirely different mentality than a rare thing that has been tucked away in someone's vault where nobody even has access to it. That creates even more of an allure when someone has something rare, but they don't allow any access to it. And what's interesting about this topic too, is it really plays into collective consciousness, where it's based on things that people are aware of. I was trying to think of a way to work in the collective unconscious, because I think about that all the time, and it does play a role, no doubt. But this Tinkerbell effect is very much based on what we are aware of, and that itself is collective consciousness. And I was also kind of wondering where it might play into conservative versus liberal values. Because on paper, you know, it just seems obvious that, I don't know whether it's on paper or not, but just it seems obvious that the Tinkerbell effect and people who generally value that would seem to be more liberal, more collectivist. It's the idea of the more people who are working together, you know, I don't know, but that just seems like a more liberal mentality. Whereas, you know, a more conservative mentality would be the more the reverse Tinkerbell effect, that the more people who are involved in something are socialists. And so the less people involved, the more individuals who are doing something on their own have the magic. They have the fairy. or I guess it's sort of pro-fairy versus anti-fairy when you actually think about the phrases Tinkerbell effect and reverse Tinkerbell effect. Because the Tinkerbell effect is the idea that we want fairies, and the reverse Tinkerbell effect is that, I don't know, that's not what it means at all. No, it's not at all. They're actually both pro-fairy, because the Tinkerbell effect is basically the more people that believe in fairies, the more likely they are to exist, whereas the reverse Tinkerbell effect is the less number of people, the fewer people who believe in fairies, the more likely fairies are to exist. So the idea is that we just want very select people believing in fairies, otherwise they won't exist. It's you want to have only the chosen people, and how you qualify as a chosen person for believing in fairies is an interesting subject that I couldn't ever possibly go into, what the qualifications for that would be. Maybe they're the same qualifications for record collecting and antiquing. But I was thinking about, you know, conservative and liberal values. And when I say that, I don't really mean actual hardline values, because I think a lot of liberals are very conservative. Not in the sense that they have conservative beliefs, and I'm not talking about moderate liberals. I'm not talking about people who lean toward the center when I say conservative liberals. I think the radical left is very conservative. I think they're very authoritarian, and they show a lot of conservative values in the same way that the far right shows a lot of authoritarian values. As a result, I would call them conservative, because I had this experience where I was at a training for work years ago, and I was sitting behind a couple young girls, and every time the teacher, who was this very nice guy, he was a middle-aged guy, he was one of those guys where he kind of like gave off a couple signals that he was probably a Democrat. You know, he didn't do that bullshit that people do where they're like, well, if you watch Fox News, you know, he didn't make weird asides like, I remember I worked with this guy like a decade ago, and he would say things like, we're having a work party, and he's like, parties, I like parties, just not the Democratic Party, you know, and it was just obnoxious. It was like, come on, man. But this guy teaching this class, this work training, he was just this middle-aged guy. Like, you could just see the divorce on him, but he was one of those guys who had just probably powered through the divorce, you know, maintained a good relationship with his kids, who he mentioned 50 times during the training. And he kind of gave off vibes that he was a Democrat. But these girls who were in front of me were obviously very radical left. And the whole time they were just whispering to each other. Anytime this guy said anything that was not the latest dogma, the latest, you know, far left dogma, they would like make these asides to each other and look at each other, and they were writing notes to each other, and I could hear what they were whispering, and they were just being so mean. It was so mean-spirited. And just to give an example, it's like if this guy said, like, if he referred to, like, men and women during his presentation, they would, like, look at each other and whisper that he didn't include, like, others as well. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, if someone wasn't totally up to date, if they hadn't read the latest BuzzFeed article, they were like coming down on him hard about that, you know. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not even making an opinion myself on that subject. I'm just saying that they were giving this guy a really hard time, and there was just a toxic cloud in front of them, and they were sitting right in front of me, so I couldn't help but notice. My point being is they reminded me of a couple church ladies. They reminded me of a couple of gossiping church ladies. And in the same way that church ladies they don't exemplify the values of Christianity. They're not exemplifying the values of the church in which they are in. I kind of felt that same vibe from these girls in front of me. And when I say they were being church ladies, when you strip away the actual values that they would claim to stand behind, They really just came across as conservatives. They came across as these very, you know, there was this false piety in this, you could see the high horse just, I don't know. It was just, it's weird. It's a weird thing where, like, I think that conservatism and authoritarianism isn't necessarily a right or left thing. I think that those tendencies exist regardless of political ideology. And of course, I'm going into this. I was talking about the Tinkerbell effect. I was talking about fairies. But I do wonder whether those tendencies tend to make people lean one way or another when it comes to politics. I don't know. I ruined this whole thing by going into that clearly. But it's something I'm going to think about a little bit more. I'm going to think about, you know, that idea of what we value, you know. And for me, I value going to a place and having it to myself. And other people go to a place and they value having people around. They feed off of that. And I also was thinking about whether, you know, extroversion and or introversion play into this. And it would seem obvious that they do. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as you would assume. I don't think that it's necessarily a thing where, like, oh, extroverts feed off of the Tinkerbell effect because they like to be a part of the group. And introverts feed off the reverse Tinkerbell effect because they like to be alone and have things to themselves. And I don't think it works that way at all, because I think there's a certain amount of there are a number of introverts that I think actually like when they can join a collective group because they're not in the spotlight. I think there's a certain form of introvert that likes when they can kind of just like slide into a group and, you know, all, you know, join the collective headspace that group is in, because that way they're participating in what's going on within a group without having to speak out or stand out in any way. So I think a lot of introverts would actually value participating in a phenomena like the Tinkerbell effect, in the same way that I think, you know, it's not like introverts inherently pursue the lone path of esoteric spirituality. You know, a lot of them, I think, would rather, say, join a religious group because that way they can just kind of, they can slide in and there's not, you know, they don't stand out, because that's a big thing about introverts. You know, that's where the shy side of introverts comes out, is not in not wanting to stand out. Whereas a lot of extroverts want to assert their individuality. So it's not that introverts value social groups or value the collective anymore. In a lot of cases, I think extroverts prefer to assert their individuality and do things on their own. And there's a number of them too who do want to participate in the group, who do feed off that energy. They're very much feeding off the group energy. But I don't think that this phenomena necessarily plays into introversion and extroversion as concretely as you would assume. That's about all I got. It's something to keep in mind, though, because I know that I definitely, like, I find myself at odds with people that are my friends. Because that's the thing, too, is your friends don't necessarily see eye to eye with you. Like, I love some people. There's some people in my life who I absolutely love, but they're the type who are like, oh, let's go do something. And they'll want to go do something where it's like, let's go to the park where everybody's playing volleyball and barbecuing, because that's the energy they want. Whereas I'm like, let's go find, like, that place under the bridge where we can just hide away from the world. You know, so it's not, your relationships aren't necessarily based on the Tinkerbell effect, although they can be, you know. Your relationships aren't necessarily based on the way that you believe in fairies, as long as you both believe in fairies. Because I think all friendships require that. I think all friendships essentially require that both parties believe in fairies, but maybe not. Maybe that's the next step in my own growth, is realizing that one person can believe in fairies and the other person might not, and you can still be friends, or you can still be, you can still get married. You can get married and raise your kids to believe in fairies and not believe in fairies, and it all doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But the important part is that you're just thinking about fairies one way or another.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free.